What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We got a big show. Lots of things are happening, both with the Canucks over the last 24 hours, around the league as well. NHL teams starting to wheel and deal, even though the Stanley Cup Final very, very much ongoing after another Edmonton win last night. We'll get to the crossover in just a minute here. Drancer, how's it going, man?
Going well, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. I'm fired up. Lots to talk about. Lots to get into today. And as mentioned, we're going to start.
And lots of pressure. And lots of pressure now on the Florida Panthers.
Yes, lots of pressure on the Florida Panthers.
That was such a good game last night that although I want to get to the crossover and all the news, like, I don't want to ignore what was one of the most fun Stanley Cup Final games that we've seen in years. So I just want to shout that out. And I do think this dynamic is fascinating because 3-2 is probably fair for this series. And yet, you have to think that the Florida Panthers, the pressure shifted to them in a major way. History on the line now for that club.
It certainly did. We can talk about that and everything happening with the Canucks and around the NHL right now. We'll get to it early today. It's time for the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dahlia. Not our normal Brady Bunch entrance for the crossover. That's a special Dune-themed entrance. A Lisan Al-Ghaib-themed entrance for you, Rick.
Rick doesn't want to do it anymore, though. He says there's too much news. So we should get on the same page, me and Dom, sometimes. Sorry about that, Rick.
Hold it a second. Don, have you seen Dune?
You know what? I saw the original Dune with Kyle MacLachlan. I haven't seen the two latest Dunes. Everybody says they're fabulous. I know. Especially the second one. Apparently the second one's better than the first one.
I thought the first one was better, but I liked the second one as well. They're both good.
But so Thomas uses Thomas, where this is coming from, Donnie, is Thomas uses a lot of stupid words in his hockey tweets. No one else does it. Mm-hmm. And last night he used a Lisan Al-Ghaib. Is it Gabe? What is it? How do you pronounce it, Thomas?
Lisan
Al-Ghaib? I don't know who Lisan Al-Ghaib is. So explain, Thomas, why you can't just say beautiful goal by Connor McDavid. You got to throw in Lisan Al-Ghaib. Why?
Well, no.
Why? You.
The Lisan Al-Ghaib is the Messiah. Yeah. And if you set up a Corey Perry rush goal, you must be the Messiah. That's the point. It's like, wow, this guy's so good that he can set up Corey Perry off the rush. That's the point. It's a pretty standard cultural reference, Rick.
So if Donnie and I are tweeting, if Donnie and I are tweeting about the Connor McDavid goal last night, here's how it goes: beautiful goal by Connor McDavid.
That's as good as it gets from us.
But Thomas wants everybody to think he went to Harvard, so he uses all these stupid words, and no one else in hockey uses them, Thomas. Nobody.
Sorry, nobody going to Harvard. I just want everyone to know I bought a ticket to see Dune 2. Come on.
Well,
Rick, you got to start making some 80s music references in your tweets. Mix those in when you're talking about Connor McDavid.
Now we're talking.
Play to your strengths.
Mad Max, Beyond Thunderdome. Donnie, do you remember Mel Gibson in Mad Max?
Well, that
was the first really good movie like that.
But the new ones are good too, along with the new Dunes, apparently.
All right.
Okay, well, we're starting off on the right foot here on a day, as you said, Rick, with lots of news happening before the Canucks, around the NHL. Let's start with the Canucks. And, of course, the news yesterday, Philip Roenick signing an 8-year deal, 7.25 AAV. And I think the biggest, we can debate the price point and the term and all of that. You know, should he drive his own pair? The biggest thing for me is that they got this deal done well before July 1st. And now maybe some other dominoes can start to fall for the Canucks.
Yeah, so now they have a better roadmap, as it were, going into to July 1st. And as far as the deal itself and Philip Perona, can he drive his own pair? That remains to be seen. I think I'm fair in saying that. But how many years, how much time went by with the Canucks, with their fan base talking about they got to find a right-handed defenseman in the wake of losing Chris Tanev. You could look at that as a mistake. You know, that took a while. They've got one at 26 years old. And our poll today, you know, bore this out that people think this is a pretty good deal, especially given the age and the fact that it lines up. And this was talked about on our show as well. It lines up with Devon Toews and what he's getting pairing alongside of Cale Makar in Colorado. So I think it makes a lot of sense for the Canucks, although some people do wonder about, you know, what happened later in the season with Philip Hronek and the drop off statistically.
Love this. Really good number. And it's not the number the agent floated in the market through a national broadcaster, which was $8 million. The Canucks' first offer was in the high sixes. You can live with 7.2. I think it's a fair number. Very good deal. First pair right shot D. Quinn Hughes has got his partner. Now you don't have to spend any time looking for a partner for Quinn Hughes. You got him locked up long term. You avoid arbitration. That's a win-win. Hughes and Hronek are going to make $15 million. That's another win-win. That's not bad when you think of it. And if you would have traded Hronek, and I said this last week, guys, there were rumors, oh, they're going to trade him. The object was always to re-sign this guy. I know the trade stuff came up, but the number one objective in the Canucks office was always to re-sign this guy. Because if you do trade him, then you got to go to July 1st. And guess what you do on July 1st? Like all teams do, you massively overpay. He's 26 years old. Take a look at Slavin in Carolina. The rumor is the Hurricanes are going to sign him at the age of 31 for 8 years. That guy's going to be 39 at the end of that contract. I know he's a good defenseman, but this guy's 26. You can live with 8 years when you're signing a guy that's 26 and is entering the prime years of his deal. This was a really good deal by the Canucks. I think they got it done a little bit later than everybody wanted to get it done. Bottom line, it's done.
See, I think they got it done pretty early given the arbitration eligibility. I mean, those deals often go into July, sometimes August, depending on when the hearing is, given just the dynamics of player leverage. I think it's a good outcome given how unique Hronek's leverage was. I think that reflects Hronek's desire to stay in the market. I do think it's a fair deal more than it's a team-friendly deal, right? I mean, you bring up Slavin in the term there, but also Slavin at 6.5. I mean, that's a guy we know can drive a first pair, right? I think the question that the Canucks ask themselves in regards to Hronek driving a pair is, I think they think he can do more in terms of sort of guiding the club through transition, handling the puck a little more. And I think with Quinn Hughes, a lot of it is pass the puck to Quinn Hughes and let the man cook, get out of the way. You know, I don't think finding another partner for Quinn Hughes, continuing to upgrade this defense, those are still organizational priorities, as I understand it, so much as, and it's not so much about whether or not Hronek can drive his own pair. It's that the organization would kind of like to give him the opportunity to, because in the role that he's in, he fits perfectly. There's unique chemistry there, but it does sort of take some responsibility off the table in terms of driving offensively for Hronek. I think the club's more eager to challenge him to do it in the context of continuing to upgrade their defense core than they are to you know, sort of like space it out just for the sake of it, right? I think it's more about challenging Hronek and getting more out of him, which I think the club is interested to see, but obviously no one really knows, given that we saw it for like four games all of last year.
You'd like to see it at some point.
A big disappointment, though, Thomas, if I may, guys, a big disappointment in that Philip seemed happy today. And I was hoping maybe he was unhappy with the contract so we could see a repeat or something like we saw during his postseason press conference. That was fun, that exchange with Jeff Patterson. I wanted to see more of that, so major disappointment. But other than that, I think most Vancouver hockey fans are pretty happy today.
Well, Donnie, I was going to say congratulations to you, Donnie, on 8 more years of Philip Hronek press conferences, because I know how much you enjoyed the last one. And you got to think, if he's going to be happy any time talking to the media, it's going to be right after he signs an 8-year deal at 7.25. So maybe you'll get grumpy. Hronek later.
There you go. In January, it's been raining for, you know, 2 months straight. Yeah, that and they've lost 10 straight. That's the Philip Hronek I want to see.
Yes.
Go ahead, Drent.
Sorry.
Thomas wants
Rick,
to talk about Dune.
You know, I think when we think about Hronek, right, when we think about the trade, when we think about the swing that the team took, you know, the like, you know, I'd contextualize it as a deal that was counterintuitive given where the team was positioned. And while it's worked out, you know, there was a reason that like Chychrun moved thereafter and other teams started trading their defensemen. It's because the Canucks paid a high market price and other sellers were interested in that price. Like, it was a big swing and overpayment. And now this is a market rate deal. And yet no one cares, nor should they, because of how well Hronek fit and what he contributed to this dream 50-win Canucks campaign. You know, I think there's signal here, Rick, in terms of what awaits the Canucks this offseason, right? Another big swing, a willingness to overpay to land the right fit. Do you see the right fit out there on the market? Do you think I'm on to something in terms of this club's ambition to do something big in the coming weeks?
Well, and the big one is Guentzel, and we'll get into Guentzel in a bit, but the Canucks had $25 million in cap space. Now they got $17 million. If you give $9 million to Guentzel, that leaves $8 million for, you know, Lindholm, Joshua, Zadorov, Myers, and Bluger. Now, I think we all know Lindholm's not coming back, but I do want to give you a couple of updates. I don't think there's anything new on Zadorov this morning, but I was told that agent Dan Milstein is willing to be patient and open-minded. If Zadorov leaves, I think that it's not going to go over well with the fan base, because he did get a ton of new fans for his playoff performance. We all know that. But the fact that Milstein is being patient with the Canucks tells you everything you need to know in that negotiation. He hasn't walked away. He hasn't said we're going to July 1st. He wants to be patient. He wants to be open-minded. His client wants to return to Vancouver. The big thing with Zadorov is, can they find the money? If they can move Mikheyev, you can find the money. But right now, it's tough. Same with Joshua. They are hoping to get a deal done. Both sides want to get it done. They continue to talk with Bluger. With Lindholm gone, the want and desire to get him back is there. Tyler Myers, work still to do, but you know they're doing their homework on July 1st, guys. You know they're doing their homework on July 1st on if so-and-so leaves, how can we replace so-and-so? There are so many gymnastics involved here with the Canucks in terms of so many moves that possibly could happen. I shouldn't have eaten that banana before I went on with you guys. But listen, a lot of stuff. Every time I come on with you, I sneak in two bananas. I shouldn't have done it, but I did it. But listen, a lot of stuff could happen with the Canucks. A lot of stuff. Go, Donnie. Help me out.
Yeah, they don't want a monkey around. Jake Guentzel, I know you talked a lot about that during our show, Rick.
Yep.
With Jake Guentzel and what he might command, $9 million a year. It's hard getting past the banana talk here. Okay. But what will that mean for the four key free UFAs they have? And but I think, I don't know how you guys feel about this, Thomas, but Guentzel and his relationship to helping Elias Pettersson on the wing there, and is that more of a priority than keeping that size on defense?
Oh, there's no question that this organization's top priority is to level up the offensive ability of this team, right? I think they're close. I think they think they're close. And what does Jim Rutherford do? What do Jim Rutherford teams do when they're close? The answer is add an established star-level scoring winger or forward. Right? Your Doug Waite tier guy, your Phil Kessel tier guy. If you think you're close, that tends to be the piece that Rutherford has added in the past. And I guarantee you, given the, you know, three Stanley Cup rings on his dresser, that, you know, that's going to be powerful in terms of informing this club's thinking. Gensel's a star. A star. I think if you get him for less than 11, it's a perfectly reasonable deal. He's that level of player, in my view. Just want to add some context into what Rick said. The sense I'm getting is that on Joshua and Zadorov in particular, the kind of active word is they're hard reads, right? It's a hard read because in the case of both players, the market for both, given their uniqueness, is going to be exceptionally robust. And yet, I think there is an understanding and a mutual sense that, hey, if they could stay in Vancouver, everyone would love that. The team would love that. The players would love that. But there's a certain number at which it makes sense. Yeah.
Yep. Donnie and I heard that, you know, the exit meetings were great where everybody said they want to come back. And this was like, you know, how many exit meetings in the last 10 years in this city do you think where the exit meetings were like, can't wait to come back? Oh, don't let me go. Are you kidding? Everybody wants. Here's my concern right now. And I'm going to tell you this much right now on Joshua and Zadorov. Do not tell me that Rick Tocchet is doing cartwheels about losing those two guys, because he's not. Because you know why? They are Rick Tocchet type guys. They play the game the way Tocchet did. And the Vancouver Canucks were hard to play against this year, and especially in the playoffs, because of guys like Dakota, who led the NHL in hits before Game 7, I think after Game 7 too, because he had nine in Game 7, and Zadorov drove the Oilers nuts. They were hard to play against. I don't think Tocchet wants to lose these two guys, but I think that he might have to lose them. I don't know how it's going to end up, Donnie.
It'll be interesting to see what the market reaction will be if they indeed sign Jake Guentzel, who you mentioned is a star, Thomas. No question about it. I think we can all agree on that. But if it's at the expense of losing that size on defense and that nastiness that they showed in the playoffs, people love that. They didn't get through two rounds. You have to remember that. But it'll be interesting to see what the reaction is, because nobody wants to see the Canucks get pushed around. That wasn't the case this season.
No.
And I think people loved that. If they lose that, I wonder what the reaction will be.
And guys, one more thing. There is concern right now about 2020, the bubble. They lost Tanev, Toffoli, Markstrom, Stetcher. Not just those four guys, but they lost a ton of leadership, which they did not replace. Chris Tanev was never replaced, never mind on the ice, but he was never replaced in the importance of him in the dressing room and for culture. At culture reasons, Chris Tanev, his departure killed this franchise. And again, you lose four or five guys like this, that's going to hurt. It's really going to hurt. There are worries about, you know, a 2020 situation.
But, Rick, wasn't one of the main things in 2020 not just that they lost those players, but the way it happened, right? Oh, we ran out of time, the lack of communication. I think in this instance,
that's it. They mismanagement.
But this time they're trying to re-sign the players, right? You're not going to be able to say, oh, they screwed it up, they botched it. If those guys leave, it's going to be because they're investing significant money in a player like Jake Guentzel, right? I think that's very different than, oh, man, we just ran out of time and we screwed up and let these guys go.
They're going to be hard to keep, though.
Yeah, okay.
Right? That's kind of my sense of it, Rick, is that the organization understands that they're going to be hard guys to keep.
Okay, we gotta let you guys go.
Yeah, because you know why? They put them...
Okay.
We were told to wrap it up at 12:20.
You're going
to
say something.
We're having
some fun here.
Keep it going. Who told you to cut us off?
Dom did. No, but they did. Yeah.
Who's Dom?
Some elementary.
Some okay,
guy.
I see what you mean. Yeah, no.
He's the Lisan El Gaia.
You're going to make a point. You see, we did say 12:20, but we have so much fun with you guys.
Now
I
lost my
lead.
But
I'm just trying to be a good
teammate. What was I saying?
Well,
all right. Donnie, you go. Donnie, talk.
No, I can't remember what I was going to say.
I lost my train.
Well, I know what I was going to say about Guentzel. I think we brought it up before. You've got Pedersen making 11-6. Rick calls him 11-6 all the time.
Of course. Yeah.
Donnie
Pedersen making 11-6. You've invested this guy in this guy for 8 years.
Yeah.
And the general thinking is you got to keep him happy with a winger like Guentzel. Is that more important than that size and edge? What an interesting time this is going to be in the next few weeks.
I don't want to lose that. Guys, I don't want to lose that size, the edge, the
hardness.
The hardness to play against. But, Thomas, you say that it's going to be hard to retain these guys, but you got to put yourself in their shoes. They've done so much to deserve big raises. And the problem the Canucks have is all the Canucks free agents is that all the free agents helped the Canucks have their best year in 14 years. So you know what, Tom? They got their hand out for a raise. That's the problem right now. And nobody wants to take a pay cut other than Myers. That's the problem they have, Thomas.
But the thing I would say...
Well, it doesn't sound like a problem.
Yeah, the thing I would say...
It doesn't sound like a problem. Good for them.
...is I agree about the size, but Zadorov and Joshua aren't the only big players in the league, right? Like, there are other guys with size. There are other guys that play physically. Look, would it be great to keep those players? They were great for you. Rick Tocchet loves them, of course. But the thing this management has shown is they can get creative finding players like that, right? Zadorov was a midseason addition. Joshua was an under-million-dollar signing. I'm fine with them prioritizing Gensel and then using creative ways like they've shown in the past to go add that size element again.
What did Patrick Helvin say at the end of the season? He said, I don't even know if this was a slip-up, Thomas, but he said our job is to find the next Dakota Joshua.
He's not going to find the next Dakota Joshua before September.
Right. There are other players out there. Another position, but you know, we talk about Brendan
Rick's
Dillon
right,
a lot. He's somebody who clearly wants to come here.
They're not finding the next Joshua by September. If he thinks he's finding the next Joshua by September, he's out to lunch. He's not going to do that. It took Joshua 2 years in Vancouver to become what he became.
Yeah, he's one of one.
And Thomas, you yourself said, Thomas, you said earlier this week on the radio that Joshua, you're not going to find that guy in 2 or 3 or 4, 5 or 6 weeks, and there's nobody on the market. You know, I believe if they lose Joshua, keep an eye on Jordan Martinook. You know, that's a guy that I think that could help fill in. But Jordan Martinook, he's not
former Vancouver Giant.
Former Vancouver Giant, by the way, a second round pick of the Giants. He was really good. He was a bit of a late. He was a bit of a late bloomer in the Western Hockey League, and he's had a fabulous career. Nobody ever talks about him. But Jordan's asking you're not going to get him at $1 or $2 million either.
Hey, guys, it's 12:23. What's going on? We're supposed to be out of here at 12:20.
My parking. I got to go. My parking. Let's go. I'm gonna get a parking ticket.
Let the record show. I tried to get you guys out of here by 12:20. Rick, go get your parking taken care of. Have another banana. Donnie, go enjoy your day. Thanks for doing this, fellas.
Yes.
Go ride a sandworm, bud.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
That is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV. You can watch them 10 to noon Monday to Friday on Check. The crossover brought to you by Bossant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles and where the players go. Yeah, that was pure chaos towards the end there, but they just love talking so much that they wanted to stay on for an extra few minutes past the deadline I was given. So shout out to Donnie and Rick for doing that. We'll take a break. There's a lot to digest. We haven't even gotten into the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade that broke momentarily or just broke shortly before we went
moments
on
after.
Air. Yeah, moments before we came on air. So we can get into that. We can digest the Hronek deal more, what's next for the Canucks, all of that. Lots coming up. Jason Bukala will join us at 1. The Roar is back at BC Place for the BC Lions 70th season. Get your tickets now at bclions.com. More Canucks talk on the other side here on Sportsnet 650.
Sportsnet 650, Vancouver.
Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. And I'll just get our listeners caught up here because a lot of people were texting in about it. I just mentioned it in passing towards the end of the segment there. But the LA Kings have traded Pierre-Luc Dubois to the Washington Capitals. Darcy Kemper, the goalkeeper, going the other way. It's 1-for-1, no salary retention. So Kemper, I believe, signed for 2 additional years or 3 additional years. I just have to double check that on Cap Friendly. But of course, Pierre-Luc Dubois, 7 years left on his deal, paying him more than $8 million a season. We all know what a disappointment he was in his one and only season in LA. So massive deal for the Kings to be able to clear up About $3 million of cap space there by bringing in Darcy Kemper, who, of course, also struggled in Washington last season. But, that's the big deal, and there's a lot to unpack there. Some other things happening around the NHL. Jacob Markstrom traded from Calgary to the New Jersey Devils, kind of long-rumored destination for the former Canucks goalie, comes to fruition. In terms of a smaller move also, Barclay Goodrow claimed by the San Jose Sharks on waivers. He has 3 years left at $3.6 million on his deal. And I will say the one thing that kind of, or one of the things that caught my interest about this kind of flurry of transactions, Goodrow being claimed by San Jose, and also I would throw the Pierre-Luc Dubois for Darcy Kemper trade in there, both feel like deals that would not have happened in the last 3 or 4 years in the true flat cap environment, right? Mm. Especially Goodrow being claimed by the Sharks. Like a guy with 3 years left at 3.6, there was no way. And with him, I know he scored 6 goals in the playoffs, right? He got hot in the playoffs and he has that kind of veteran aura about him. But still, you weren't getting rid of that player on waivers over the last 3 or 4 years. And even this one-for-one deal, where, you know, the Kings are getting off of like 5 years of Pierre-Luc Dubois' salary and saving $3 million plus in those first 3 years with Darcy Kemper. I don't think that's happening in the flat cap era either. And it does make me wonder, is there a landing spot out there for Ilya Mikheyev? I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. But you look at Barclay Goodrow going to the Sharks and the Rangers getting completely out of that one, and it makes me think it's at least possible. The other dynamic here that I think is interesting. Go ahead.
Can I jump in?
Yeah.
Sorry, I just want to jump in because I've got a minor Canucks update related to some of this. But my understanding is Goodrow or claiming Goodrow, and it's a moot point since the San Jose Sharks had top priority anyway. Mm-hmm. But my understanding is a Goodrow claim was never a consideration for the Canucks, which I do think is interesting because one way to tie Dubois getting traded and Goodrow also getting claimed off waivers is that it removes two key and pretty intriguing potential secondary market guys from the market for centermen. Right now, as Rick reported and I wrote last night in my column at The Athletic, reacting to the Hronek deal, Lindholm, the club, I think is beginning to understand that his return is very unlikely. It's a different stage now than it is with Zadorov and Dakota Joshua, where I think the club looks at it as those are going to be difficult to keep. But really, those are, and the watchword here is like tough reads, because I do think there's a willingness to pay them to a point. Maybe not the point that they'd get on the open market. And I do think there's a willingness to stay and give a little on the player side, but maybe not to the point that where the Canucks are at. And so those are more like bridges that might not get built, as opposed to bridges that may no longer be there, right? They may no longer be there on the map. And that does increase the urgency from the Canucks side to get Bluger done. That this is why the Mikheyev spin, the idea that maybe there's a landing spot for Mikheyev, why I'd kind of push back on it a bit, Jamie, is there's a landing spot for centerman.
Right.
There's a landing spot for centerman because you're looking at Lindholm at 7x7 and you're looking at Wenberg at 5x5 and you're looking at not a lot else, right? Maybe Chandler Stephenson, but some teams would think of him as a winger. And then you're looking at fourth line guys. Like there's just, The options for centermen are dismal on the open market, and Gaudreau and Dubois avoiding the buyout, because that's effectively what these moves are. Mm-hmm. These are like reshuffle moves. Why did these happen after game five, right? Or during the Stanley Cup Finals, part of this, right? Like when the Oilers extended the series, all of a sudden, if you're the Kings, that one-thirds buyout on Dubois is looking dicey because he turns 26 on June 24th. If the Oilers win one more game, the buyout window is not going to open on time, and you're stuck with the contract at a two-thirds buyout rate. I mean, truly, like, I know that's bizarre, but that's like part of the logic of the timing of this deal, clearly. And Dubois and Gaudreau as like buy low options in free agency, hey, that's pretty interesting. That kind of changes a team like Vancouver's options on the center market on July 1st. But at full freight, I mean, that wasn't a consideration for the Canucks. And I do think that tells you why, I do think Bluger's become like the pending UFA now to watch pretty closely here over the course of this week, because the Canucks feel some urgency to get that done. And I do think the organization is comfortable, you know, in line with kind of what we've been saying they should be comfortable with going into next season with, you know, Miller, Pettersson, Suter, Bluger, Amon down the middle, and kind of hoping that you can add a right-handed, you know, face-off guy, either like a Sam Carrick on the cheap in free agency just as a depth guy, or, you know, find another piece prior to the playoffs if you're able to repeat what this club was able to do last season again next year. So, you know, I think there's actually some pretty interesting Canucks notes, but I'd be careful about reading too much into the market for Gaudreau. Like, I take your point about the flat cap. I think you're dead on there.
Yeah.
But I do think there's a distinction between Dubois and Gaudreau, a positional one that's like extremely powerful, because there's a lot of guys, you know, there's a lot of like Arvidsson guys. There's a lot of like those types of buy low wingers on the market that teams might prefer to Mikheyev at 4.75 for 2 years, where that's just not the case for, you know, big centermen like Dubois and Gaudreau.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Now, I think another part of it, and this doesn't necessarily explicitly relate to the Canucks and Mikheyev, but with the Sharks claiming Gaudreau specifically, right? And, you know, we've heard the reporting on Chicago wants to get significantly better. They want to make a play for guys to be more competitive. We understand Utah is going to be in that position. Like, we might be going into a year where there might be no tanking teams next year, and really no teams that are even like not tanking but okay with being bad. You know what I mean? Like Chicago.
Calgary?
But even they, are they going to be, how truly bad are they going to be?
They could be pretty bad.
That's fair. Yeah, but I don't think they're not going to tank, though. They're not going to tank. I don't think.
They should consider it. They should strongly consider it.
That's different, though. I don't think they're going to, right? But like, I don't think I think we're going to
see. Go look at that lineup, man. It is ugly.
That's true. But I think we're going to see fewer teams who are like true bottom feeders with no ambitions to even be competitive next year. Right? Like, once you cry, if San Jose is trying to get better, Chicago, Utah, etc., I would expect Anaheim to still try to get better. Philly took that big step forward, yep, kind of unexpectedly last year. Like, a lot of the teams that we looked at as maybe in, you know, multi-year bottom feeding cycles for a variety of reasons are trying to come out of that. And again, the key thing is, I think, just it's going to drive more salary, higher salaries for players on the open market this year, right? Because there are those there is that extra layer of team that wants to acquire talent, that's interested in getting players where they haven't necessarily been interested in it over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and you know, I wonder too if, you know, even though we've seen moves to like reset the decks and avoid buyouts, I do kind of wonder too if we're in a new era when the buyout window does finally open 48 hours after the Stanley Cup is awarded, if teams are a little more willing to consider buyouts as like a weapon, part of doing business, as opposed to a last resort, the way they certainly were during the cap era, and really the way they have been for much of the cap era entirely, flat cap era, excuse me. But you think about like the Winnipeg Jets buyout Blake Wheeler, and that was a net benefit, right? They had a great season.
Mm-hmm.
The Nashville Predators bought out Matt Duchene. Well, that was a net benefit. They were able to use that space on O'Reilly and Shen, and that worked. That was helpful and powered their, you know, maybe not a dream season, but a very impressive season for the Predators. Boston bought out Mike Riley. Mike Riley ended up being effective in New York, on the island, and you know that Boston shocked the world by continuing to do Boston Bruins things, no matter how significantly tilted the odds are against them. And then, of course, the Canucks with Oliver Ekman-Larsson, nearly the Game 5 hero, yep, or for the Florida Panthers, and then the GOAT, ultimately, because he thought that that puck had gone in, that Tkachuk miraculously saved off the line. We all know what happened. We all know how the Canucks used that cap space. I do kind of wonder if we're into this world where cap growth is going to be steady, right? Do teams start to operate, you know, with a little more flexibility, a little bit more like NFL teams, where it's like you're willing to eat dead money, because why would you, yep, prevent yourself from continuing to build what you're building just to like weather a contract when you can just sort of push the pain a few years down the line? You know, I'll be really curious to see when the buyout window opens, how different that is. And then that said, too, I saw a lot of, well, the Hronik deal is going to be a steal when the cap keeps going up for the next 4 or 5 years. And I just want to give everyone a quick history lesson, because you know me, you know my refusal to accept that cap growth yep. should ever be assumed by anyone, right? So the salary cap got imposed for the 2006-2007 season. And 2 years later, after 2 years of like massive, like $10 million a year cap growth, right? It went from like 30, something in the 30s to something in the mid 40s to $50 million in the first 3 years. And then what happened? The stock market crashed. And suddenly and unexpectedly, the cap was then relatively flat for a two-year period. Cap growth returned. And then the lockout, somewhat less expectedly, ushered in another 2 years, one in which the cap was actually meaningfully rolled back by $4.5 million and then bounced back to the level. So you had another 2 years of cap growth then. Then in 2015, a once-in-a-generation reset of the value of the Canadian dollar suddenly caused the cap to be flat again for another two seasons. And then in 2020, I don't need to remind anybody, mm-hmm. Rudy Gobert got pulled from a game. The whole world shut down. The flat cap era was imposed. And for 4 years, we had zero cap growth. Zero. And so we're now like going into year like 19 of the salary cap era, year 19 or 18, something like that. And for 10 of those years, we have rather suddenly, or in the case of the lockout, by planning, bumped into a moment where cap growth just came to an unexpected or pre-planned halt. And now we're in this world where like the Bally Sports bankruptcy hearing included a very stern warning from the judge to the three sports teams impacted in Diamond Sports Holdings, which owns Bally, the RSN for like the majority of American teams, saying, you know, to this point, I've been asking you guys to resolve your issues without me. If you can't do it, I'm going to have to do it myself. Like a pretty stern wording from that Houston bankruptcy judge in that hearing a couple days ago. You've got the CBA expiring in after the 2025-2026 season, which ain't too far away. And you've got the Canadian broadcast rights deal, mm-hmm. right? That's also expiring. And who knows what that looks like on the other side. So, I mean, it doesn't even take a lot of imagination to look out on the horizon and see some potential trouble spots. Like the cap hopefully will go up, right? The cap will hopefully continue to go up and make things like the Oliver Ekman-Larson buyout hit and, you know, the Pettersson extension and the Hronik extension and the Miller extension, like far more palatable for the Vancouver Canucks. But this team can't lean on that, right? Like, and that's the good thing about the Hronik deal is it should be fine. It should be fine value. I don't think it's a steal value by any means, but I think it's decent. I think it's fair. You know, it should continue to be fair, even if cap growth is at some point interrupted by world events. But like history tells us that it's likely to be over the life of this deal. Like yeah. more likely that we are going to have something unexpected shake our assumptions of, you know, continued cap growth than we are to just see the cap like steadily continue to go up. Because, you know, to this point, 20 years of cap history, it ain't happened yet.
Well, and the point about the kind of long-term ramifications of the Hronik deal, it's something I wanted to get into because, look, of course there's significant risk. I mean, how much have we talked about it, right? And I've been very wary of saying, oh yeah, go 8 years, 7.5 plus. I'm happy they kept it below 7.5 at that 7.25 number. But the important thing about this for me, it's not, okay, the cap will go up, so in years, you know, 6 through 8, it's actually going to be a real steal. The important thing is what happens in the next 2 years, the next 3 years, right? When you have him and Quinn Hughes under contract at the same time. And I think the benefit of going long is, right, you keep that AAV a little bit lower because you go to the max 8 years. You buy yourself a little bit of extra flexibility over these next few seasons. But that's really going to be the test of the contract for me is how much success do they have over the next two or three seasons? If they have a lot of success in that time period, then I think the contract's going to be a home run no matter what happens with the salary cap or his performance down the road. To me, this is just another deal that continues to emphasize something we've been hitting on, which is they got to be aggressive this summer, right? Like, I have my concerns about this deal. ultimately, there was no easy alternative, right? So I think this is probably the best of a bunch of kind of difficult options for them to do. But I'll like this deal even more if they go out and sign Jake Guentzel, right? Like, I'll like this deal even more if they continue to push all in on the near term, on the next couple of seasons, because I think that's what this demands. I don't think you're doing this planning for, okay, we're going to be able to fit, you know, this kind of team around Phil Hronek in years 5 and 6 of this deal. You're doing it because of what it allows you to do in the next couple of years, what, you know, the competitiveness it allows you to have at the top end of your defense group in the next couple of years. So to me, it's like, okay, you got this done relatively, you know, as you said, retail price, like not a discount, but not unfair, a price you can live with. Use that now to go keep being aggressive and keep pushing all in on the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, and this is where I think the rubber meets the road on those hard read players, right? Because you know, I don't think I need to tell our listeners my regard for Joshua and Zadorov, right? I mean, I think they're awesome. Mm-hmm. And I do think they're unique. And I don't think there's a one-for-one replacement for Dakota Joshua in free agency, right? I think what you're looking to do is bring in like another forward with size to compete with Vasily Podkolzin. And hopefully they both hit, but hopefully you at least get one guy in your bottom six who can do 80%. Of what Joshua did. And even that is, you know, cross your fingers and kind of hope. And if you have to acquire some size, you might have to pay for some size. And, you know, that's the argument for signing Joshua, is it's just about impossible to replace him. There are definitely big physical defensemen in free agency, but are they as mean as Zadorov? Do they carry the puck as well as Zadorov? Are they as fun to listen to as Zadorov? Do they wear a turtleneck and double-breasted suit as well as Zadorov? Like, the answer across the board is no. So, you know, I think there's a real value in keeping both guys. And yet I think it's important to understand, not from a negative sense, like this isn't criticism. This is about trying to understand what this team is doing and what it means, right? They overpaid when they acquired Hronek, and they paid a huge sum of money. Like, if you were someone who was saying, oh, what a steal contract for the Canucks, because of sort of the manufactured consent of some leaked numbers over 8 or some speculation that it was going to be over 8. Like, within 12 hours or 24 hours, you had Friedman saying Slavin, one of the best defensemen in the league, is signing for 6.5. Like, shake your head, right? Like, you know, Donnie threw out the Devon Taves comp, and it's like, you know, the thing about Devon Taves is he's one of the 10 best defensemen in the world, right? Like, I like Hronek, but I've been pounding the table saying he should be their priority, right? Like, they've done sort of something very much in line with my analysis of what they should do. So this is not criticism. It's about understanding this, right? They overpaid for Hronek, and they paid fair value. They paid big to keep him. And that tells you that when the club believes, right, that they have found the right guy at the right stage of his career, the right age, the right skill set, the right sort of rarity in terms of their profile, right? Top 4 right-handed defensemen, at least, if you want to say top pair. Well, certainly he gave you ample cause to do so in the first 50 games last season. They will pay. They will overpay. They're going to worry about finding that guy, right, the perfect fit, more than they're going to worry about the price. And with Joshua and Zadorov, you know, Joshua's awesome, played top 6 minutes for them in the playoffs, but he's also only done it once, right? Like, he's only been at that level once. Zadorov played top pair minutes for them occasionally in the playoffs, but he's got 600 games under his belt and has mostly been a 4 or 5 defenseman, right? Both in terms of actual impact and in terms of deployment. Those might not be the guys they're willing to overpay for, right? Like, that's kind of where we're at. It's kind of at the top of the lineup, right? It's kind of that big piece, that piece to really like up the level of this team, as opposed to being like a perfect cog capable of overachieving in Rick Tocchet's system that I think are going to be this team's offseason priorities. I mean, that's my understanding. I think that's what this team is focused on. And, you know, consistent with what we've been talking about, I think that's right.
Yep.
Like, I think that's the right way to approach it. And, you know, I do think the Guentzel thing's interesting, but I'd add too, like, my understanding is I think the Canucks are looking at free agency and being aware that that things will change. And I think there's a few names that interest them. So it's certainly going to be fascinating, but I do think the Hronek deal, especially if you understand it as like a retail price paid on the contract and an overpayment when they traded him. That worked, right? That worked. Certainly better than I imagined it. I actually think that will help you understand what comes next. I think it will help you understand the impasse with Zadorov and Joshua. And I certainly think it helps you make sense of, you know, the Gensel rumors and probably make peace with the idea that if you're thinking Gensel at nine, you might want to add like adjust $2 million to that cap hit.
$2 million.
Yeah. $11 million. Yeah.
Woo.
What are we talking about? We're talking about the top free agent forward on the market. We're talking about a world where every team has just gotten more cap growth this summer than they have seen in 5 years, right? Which, you know, in aggregate adds $120 million to the system in terms of overall cap space. It's actually more than that. It's like $140 million. I think nine seems real light in a world where there's going to be a line of teams mm-hmm. that would just absolutely love to add genuine top line star two-way winger with a history of elevating his game in the postseason, Jake Gensel. What, of course, like nine? What are you talking about? I don't think that's low.
It's not going to be nine. I don't think it's going to be 11 either, though.
We'll see.
That'd be a heck of a payday.
He better really want to come play for you.
Yes.
He better, like, maybe it's a Panarin situation, right? Like, Panarin could have gotten 11 plus. He ended up lower than that because he wanted to play on Broadway. If he really wants to play for you, Right, just like everyone dunking on Frank Saravalli over the Hronek 8 thing. It's like, well, Hronek decided he really wanted to be here, right? Like, there was, as much as I'm saying it's retail value, there were definitely some people in the business who thought, hey, if Hronek had wanted to really turn the screws given his leverage, he absolutely could have done better, right? Like, that was partly the reaction within the industry. That doesn't make it a team-friendly deal. It's just a reflection of Hronek's leverage and the fact that the 7.25 number, you know, reflects that leverage, but also reflects the player's desire, genuine desire, ultimately, to remain in Vancouver and play for this franchise.
And as you pointed out, they're going to be in on Gensel. There's other names that interest them as well. And I'll say, you know, I want them to keep being aggressive, not just in terms of pursuing UFAs, but in terms of putting some of their premium futures on the line if the right deal is out there as well, right? I think that should be the mindset. The Hronek deal makes that more important in my eyes to keep going down that path, keep maximizing the value you get from the player over the next few years here when Quinn Hughes, his likely partner next year, again, is still under contract. We'll take a break right now. Jason Buchla is going to join us on the other side. We'll get his thoughts on the Stanley Cup final, what Connor McDavid is doing, the Filip Hronek deal, the flurry of moves around the NHL as well. All of that coming up next here on Canucks Talk. Jason Buchla next here on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Lena. Want even more sports content? Check out Sportsnet 650 on social. I'll show you the lighter side of sports and take you behind the scenes at Rogers Arena. Follow at Sportsnet 650 on X, Instagram, and TikTok.
To play at the highest level of international para hockey, women need to crack the men's team, a feat only three female players have ever accomplished in the history of the sport. There is inequity on the ice, and it tilts heavily in favor of men. The National Women's Para Hockey Team of Canada needs to be recognized and supported. Now is the time. With your help, they can create a legacy of equity and excellence in the sport. Help bring gender equity to para hockey today at WPHCanada.com. That's WPHCanada.com.
Hey Vancouver, is your business, school, or sports team looking to turn heads with custom apparel? Meet Threadco Print Shop, your go-to destination for screen printing and embroidery. At Threadco, they're more than just another print shop. They bring your design to life at their brand new state-of-the-art facility in South Vancouver. With over two decades of experience, Threadco specializes in delivering a seamless experience for all your custom apparel decoration. Experience the Threadco advantage today. Visit their showroom or connect with them at ThreadcoPrint.com.
It's the Nissan Flash Sale, only from June 18th to 22nd, where you can lease or finance the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder from only 2.49% for 24 months. Plus, get a $500 Nissan bonus. This is your chance to get behind the wheel of a new Nissan. But hurry in, these offers will be gone in a flash. Conditions apply, see Nissan.ca or your BC Nissan dealers for details.
Next up at the pump, it's Ben. Looks like he's trying a new approach here. Yes, he's selected new and improved Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. He's got a good grip on the handle. swinging a drive.
Buck Martinez? Shouldn't he be at the game?
And we'll be right back.
You can save 10 cents per liter on Shell V-Power Nitro Plus on every 2024 Toronto Blue Jays regular season home game day. Opt in and pay using the Shell app. Terms and conditions apply.
Summer on Sportsnet. Three can't-miss NHL events. First, celebrate the league's best.
And the heart goes to...
The NHL Awards, June 27th. Then, see which team will change their destiny.
The Celebrini factor, a massive impact.
The NHL Draft, June 28th and 29th. Plus, when free agents hit the open market, we've got you covered. Hockey Central signing season begins July 1st. Three huge NHL events. Watch on Sportsnet or stream on Sportsnet Plus.
On a team, the guys scoring are just as important as the guys stopping the other side from doing the same. That's how the West Coast Auto Group has built their elite team. At West Coast Toyota, Mazda, Nissan, Kia, and Ford Lincoln, the cars are the offense, and their great service department is the defense, preventing breakdowns and keeping you in the game. Elite from top to bottom. The West Coast Auto Group, just over the bridge in Maple Ridge. Visit them online at westcoastautogroup.com.
Sonic 104.9 is the new alternative.
Be you.
Be different.
Be alternative.
Welcome a little Sonic into your life. Sonic 104.9.
Or tell your smart speaker to play Sonic Radio.
In Abbotsford, hockey goes a little bit like this.
Stevens jams it in front, JetBlue scores!
This is Leave It All on the Ice Grid.
Sassen took a high hit, Tanner Cleaver's gonna drop the gloves with Onyebuchi!
This is Never Give Up Grind.
Tolopila makes a great save, sliding to his left!
This is Push the Pace Towards Greatness.
Dave takes a shot, he scores!
In Abbotsford, we're just getting started. Join the momentum and secure your membership at abbeyconnects.com/membership. Together, we are proudly Abbotsford.
Hey, it's Kevin Woodley, and there's nothing better than driving to a playoff game when the sun is out. Except maybe doing it in the completely redesigned 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. With a bold modern appearance and luxurious interior that now includes a standard third row of seating for seven. That's enough room for an entire goalie department and their gear. Or for everyone hopping back on the playoff bandwagon. Check out the gorgeous new 2024 Santa Fe at White Rock Hyundai or visit them today at whiterockhyundai.com.
Hit the course for the Rogers Jays Care Celebrity Golf Classic. The 2024 Classic is back with Canucks alumni and BC sports celebrities in support of BC Challenger Baseball. Challenger lets athletes with disabilities experience being part of a team with their families and playing fun, safe baseball. Join us for a fun day of golf, brunch, and time with friends, all while you help get more athletes on the field playing baseball. Register to participate on July 25th.